Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. Now, in today's episode, we'll talk about estate planning in the UAE. What is estate planning in general? At a high level, it's basically kind of your legal and strategic process for organizing how your assets, responsibilities, personal affairs, and including children, will be managed after your passing. Some of the most relevant questions that usually come up is, you know, who takes care of your children? Who inherits all your assets? Who makes your wishes come true and sort of carried out after your passing? And how your debts and liabilities are handled? Now, it's important in particular to discuss this topic in the UAE because it's a very multi-layered and a very complex area of law as compared to other jurisdictions. So in many other jurisdictions, for example, in the U.S., if whether you have a will or you don't have a will, there is some certain predictability in terms of who will inherit what upon passing. So, for example, in most cases, and obviously the U.S. itself is fairly complicated because it depends, has so many different states, but in most cases, when a person, if a married couple and one of the spouses dies, it's the spouse, the default is that the spouse inherits all the assets. In other countries, for example, it's usually all the assets get passed on to the children. And yet in some other countries, it's almost impossible for the children to be disinherited. So no matter what happens, the children will always inherit one way or the other. So many different countries have their own kind of nuanced approach to inheritance. Now, the UAE is particularly more complex because today it's a lot more complex. And I'll give you a little bit of a historical trip down the memory lane because things are very different today from where they were. But as we have the discussion today, the topic is a lot more complex because UAE's approach to inheritance has become a lot more complex. And it kind of brings these, some examples I've just given you, kind of brings a lot of these examples into play within one jurisdiction. So now let's talk about what are the different options in estate planning. So one option is you have no will. So just somebody passes away and then what happens? We'll talk about that. So that's sort of in terms of broad categories. If you don't have a will, there isn't really sort of a roadmap pursuant to which the courts or the administrators will ultimately decide how your legacy, your life legacy, should be distributed or handled after your death. Now, if you have a will, then you have a roadmap. That roadmap has already been detailed by virtue of you before passing kind of deciding you want these assets to go to certain people, and this is how you want the guardianship or custody of your children to be distributed, and so on and so forth. So those are the two different categories, and we'll talk about both of them and the different laws that apply. But generally speaking, what this discussion today will focus is on the importance of having a will, in particular in a place like the UAE, and it's exactly for the reason I mentioned earlier, which is it's extremely complex today in terms of just the types of laws that can come into play and the types of options that could potentially apply for somebody if you don't have a will. So we'll focus the most of the discussion on the importance of the wills and the types of wills that exist in the UAE. But before we delve into that, let me talk to you also about what happens when you don't have a will altogether. As I said earlier, in many other countries, it's sort of you don't necessarily almost need to have a will because in particular, if it's a more like a simple family dynamic, because the laws will sort of take care of, will protect. Now, in the UAE, for obvious reasons, because majority of us here are non-UAE nationals, we're residents, and we come from all the different countries, and so therefore we may want different laws to apply. That's one sort of complex part about the UAE. And the other one is that so many of us residents here, we have such mixed backgrounds, right, and such mixed family dynamic. Couples come from different countries, different jurisdictions, different cultures, different different religions, there is a lot of the time they've had previous relationships, previous marriages, or children from other, you know, sometimes even multiple marriages. So it's a lot more complex. And cases like this, and then on top of that, you know, these mixed families, they end up in yet another place in the UAE. So which law would apply? Would it be the law of, let's say, the husband who is from France, or the wife who is from Zimbabwe, what if the husband had a previous family, and you know he has children that come from Canada, for example. So there's a lot more layers to it, and this is why, and it's, you know, I guess because of that, that the UAE over the last several years has become a lot more open, and therefore a lot more flexible in terms of the options that could exist or could be available to the many residents here with these complex family dynamics. So on the one hand, the UAE has opened up a lot more and become a lot more flexible. But on the other hand, because of all this flexibility, there's so many more sort of options on the menu, so to speak. That's why it's that much more important for those who live here to educate themselves, to understand what these options are, so that they can make the right choices for their family based on their specific family's dynamics. So now let me kind of take a step back in terms of the legislative framework or the legislative foundation. So what are we talking about when we're talking about estate planning? Basically, if in simple terms, we're talking about the law that's usually called personal status law. Now, the personal status law, it applies to different aspects of family dynamics. So it applies, for example, from the very beginning, from marriages, prenuptial agreements, then the terms of marriages, then custody, guardianship, divorces, and ultimately inheritance, right? So that's what's usually called the personal status law. And so the personal status law in the UAE covers all these aspects, including inheritance. Now, until 2017, so that's only about 9 years ago. I can't believe it's already been 9 years. So until that time, the UAE basically only had one effective option for in terms of inheritance, and that was because there's only one UAE personal status law. The UAE personal status law, it's a federal law, which means it applied to the entire country, and the principles, it's a civil law, the UAE is a civil law legislative system. So, but it was based on principles of Sharia. So it's not a Sharia, it's not a Muslim law per se, but the law itself was based on principles of Sharia, which meant that upon someone's passing, the aspects of that personal law that would apply to one's inheritance were done on the basis of principles of Sharia. So that was kind of the default application and the most common application of the law. Now, as per that law, and this we're talking a little bit of a historical backdrop, as per that law, there was also mentioned in that same law and in a few other laws that allowed residents, so non-UAE nationals, to also select the laws of their own country. So now that provision had two complications. One is that because there was a separate law that carved out any assets, any real estate assets that are attached to the land outside of basically one's ability to apply foreign law. So in other words, anything to do with real estate would always be subject to the laws of the land, which ultimately would go back to principles of Sharia. So even in those cases, this is pre-2019, even those cases where somebody, for example, would apply foreign law, or even if they had a will, foreign will, and they tried to apply here, real estate assets would ultimately be carved out from that application of the foreign law. So that was one complication or complexity to the previous version of the law. The other one, more practical, that even if for those who wanted to apply foreign law by choice, for them to do that is, in practical terms, very difficult. Because ultimately what you're trying to do is you're trying to educate an Emirati judge about the laws of a foreign country. Let's say it could be Canada, Australia, or US. And it's depending on which jurisdiction it is, especially if you're in common law like the US or the UK, So much of the law in these countries, for example, is not codified per se. So it's all case law based, which means it's a decision upon decision upon decision. So how do you, plus, let's use the U.S. as an example, because A, that's where I'm qualified, and B, it serves as a good case study because there's so many different states and inheritance law is actually different amongst the different states. So like, how would you educate an Emirati judge about certain aspects of, you know, not just the U.S. inheritance laws, but in particular of a specific state. And then based on the different case law that exists across the country. So it was really difficult. So in practical terms, although that option in the law existed, in reality, it was impossible to really effectively benefit from it. There were a few exceptions, and that's in particular from what we know, the laws that involved Indian expats, just because Indian expats have been so much more present in the UAE for so much longer, so they've sort of had more time and I guess, you know, they've had a lot of interest here that it made it worthwhile for them ultimately for somebody at least once upon a time, it made it worthwhile for them to try to educate a local judge of Indian law. And so from there on, things kind of followed. So there was one exception that we knew of where if somebody wanted an application of an Indian law, the courts here were a little better informed. And so there was a more realistic chance that particular law could be potentially applied and understood and applied. So apart from that was the options really, perhaps in the 95% of the cases, maybe I'm exaggerating, but more or less, the only option was the UAE personal status law that was based on principles of Sharia. And that in itself is a complex equation, and we can talk about what that means in practical terms when I go through my spiel here. But it's Sharia is very complicated. You know, it's basic equations, and it's not static. It really depends on so many factors, kind of as life goes on. So that was kind of the only option. Now, in 2017 in Dubai, there was a new option that appeared, and that was in the DFC courts. So the Dubai governor, Dubai legislators basically introduced a new law that allowed non-Muslim expats who basically Dubai residents who had assets in Dubai to opt for the jurisdiction of the DIFC courts, which is its own common law jurisdiction within the UAE legal system. And the DIFC court stands for Dubai International Financial Center Court. So it's a common law court based on sort of English law. So there was a law that allowed non-Muslim expats to take the benefit of the new law that was introduced in the DIFC, allowing expats to have a will. So, clarified the previous exception that exists in the UAE laws that would carve out the real estate assets, right? So as per this specific Dubai law, now the real estate assets could also be included in the DFC wills, and therefore, because of the specific law, that particular law would prevail over the previous law I discussed earlier, where the real estate assets would be carved out and would have to be subject to the law of the land. So that was kind of the introduction into a new option. And so as of 2017, that became for non-Muslim expats who had assets in Dubai, had that other option of now having a will. So they were no longer just reliant on the personal status law, so in the principles of Sharia in the event of death and ultimate passing. So that was 2017, but as I mentioned earlier, that particular exception was still, for given the demographic of the UAE, was still very limited. Limited in the sense that it only applied to non-Muslim expats, and there's a lot of expats in the UAE who are Muslim. And the restrictions there is also very, very sort of expressed and very strict. And there's like, you had to basically, you have to sign off and say that you you're not Muslim and you have never been a Muslim, because there's lost a lot of residents, for example, who might have been born, raised elsewhere, might have a Muslim sounding name, but they don't consider themselves Muslim. And so they would not be able to benefit from that specific law. So the DIFC was limited only to non-Muslims and ultimately only to the assets that were based in Dubai. Fast forward, as law progressed and the UAE legislative system continued to evolve, Abu Dhabi, interestingly enough, led the way with a kind of a breakthrough law of its own, and it created a law that was called, and there's a little bit of a history there, and I've done separate podcasts on this topic in the past, but it was basically, it's an Abu Dhabi civil marriages law. It's called the Law on Civil Marriages and its effects. So it's effectively a civil personal status law. And it was interesting, a quick snapshot or a quick sort of overview of how quickly the law evolved. Because I remember still to this day, the law was introduced in 2020, at the end of 2020. And it was called the civil marriages law for non-Muslim expats. And literally within 2 or 3 months, the name of the law changed and it just became basically civil marriages law for and its effects. That's it. Civil marriages law and its effects, which basically took away the restriction of it applying only to non-Muslim expats. Long story short, as per this specific law, now I guess it opened up the option for anybody outside of just Dubai also who want to have a civil will to register a will in Abu Dhabi. And it's Abu Dhabi Judicial Department, or ADJD. So it's Abu Dhabi courts. So we had UAE personal status law, we had the DIFC law, and now we had the Abu Dhabi or the ADJD civil personal status law. That, interestingly enough, the law also kind of continued to evolve. Long story short, and, again, I've done podcasts on this topic as the law was kind of evolving at the time in more detail. But the interesting aspect of that law as it exists today is that it also included, among other things, option for anybody who wanted to have a civil will. So therefore, removing the limitation of Muslim expats. In other words, if a Muslim expat wants to have a civil will, now this law in Abu Dhabi, the civil law in Abu Dhabi allowed for Muslim expats to also opt for a civil will away from a Muslim will. So now that obviously opened up a lot more options for beyond the DIFC, because the DIFC, remember, was only limited to non-Muslims and only in Dubai. So that was a huge new frontier. And then along the way, also the DIFC option opened up as well, because not in terms of non-Muslims, but in terms of the assets that could be included. Then there was at some point there was an MOU that was signed with Ras Al Khaimah, which is a neighboring emirate, that also allowed to include RAC assets into the DIFC. Well, and ultimately then it was all of the UAE assets that could be included, and then at present, you can even include global assets. So the DIFC option still exists, but it's still limited only to non-Muslims. But it now can include all sort of global assets into the will itself. So it has also evolved and progressed quite a bit since its inception. So now we've got still UAE personal status law, and then we have Abu Dhabi civil personal status law, then we have the DIFC wills and estates law, and then shortly after the Abu Dhabi law, the UAE introduced its own, the UAE that is at the federal level, introduced its own civil law. So until that time, we didn't have civil personal status law. We only had personal status law, but not civil personal status law. And so, interestingly enough, in this case, Abu Dhabi is the emirate that led the way in terms of paving the path for a civil person status law. And then the UAE, when the UAE at a national level as a country decided to adopt a similar law, it sort of used much of the Abu Dhabi's version of the law and codified it into a national law. Now, as things stand today, the Abu Dhabi civil personal law is still a little more established, a little more detailed than the federal civil personal status law. But now we have the option of the federal civil personal status law as well. So that's yet another option that appeared. And then finally, just last year, I guess 2024 now, the time flies, in 2024, the UAE finally amended its personal status law, the law that we started with. It amended it and ultimately made it a lot more modern in some ways, a lot more flexible, a lot more kind of open-minded, allowing for non-residents or for residents, non-Muslim residents, and by the way, also for non-Muslim nationals. These days there's more... there's more non-Muslim, UAE nationals than before. So they can also avail themselves of the civil personal status law. But generally speaking, the personal status law now has a lot more options in terms of what foreigners and non-Muslim nationals can bring in terms of the law that they want to apply to their estate. So, for example, it gave option of bringing in the foreign law or they could choose even if they wanted to choose the Islamic law, but from their own countries. It just made, generally speaking, easier to even enforce highly at a high level. We can talk about it in a little more detail, but at a high level, it also made it easier to even enforce foreign wills. So as things stand today, why I kind of went through this a trip down the memory lane, because it's important to understand that things have evolved significantly, because until just recently, we were very limited in our options in terms of being able to have a will or in terms of the which law would apply upon one's passing. And the law evolved so fast, and there are so many different levels that it's important to just give this high-level overview of the different laws, because as things stand today, any one of these laws apply. And that's in summary, basically. Let's say if somebody dies in the UAE, whether they have a will or don't have a will, there is at least six different options that they have. So they can either avail themselves of the UAE personal status law, which basically based on principles of Sharia, or if they may, depending on where they're from, they may be able also to avail themselves of the UAE civil personal status law, or they could avail themselves of the DIFC law, depending if they had a will, or ADGM law, if they had a will in ADGM, ADJD, and so, and also they could potentially bring foreign law. So that's so we've got UAE personal status law, UAE civil personal status law, you have the DIFC, ADJD, and then we have possibility of bringing in foreign law, and finally possibility of bringing a foreign will, which is different from a foreign law, and I'll describe this shortly. So now we have six options. Anybody wants to decide, upon death, law to apply, you've got a whole buffet of options. There's six different options. And this is also why I just want to give full disclosure, because the point here is not to say, well, if you don't have a UAE will, then you're out of luck. These days, it's not necessarily the case, though it's much easier still to have a will, and I'll explain why. Even if you don't have a will, we have, by the way, in our last few years, been able to enforce foreign wills. It's harder, it takes longer, and there's a lot of nuances, and it's not as predictable, but it's now also possible, unlike before. So because on the one hand, you have all these choices, on the other hand, because the choices exist, it's that much more compelling for a lot of the couples here, the families here who live here, to understand what the options are, and then pick the right option for them. And that's exactly for the reason I mentioned earlier. It's just there's so many residents here that live with such complex family dynamic that, you know, within one family, you can potentially have five different nationalities to you, and therefore different laws that could apply based on, you know, the spouse's nationality. Sometimes they have multiple nationalities, the children and their nationalities, and then children from previous marriages and their various nationalities and so on and so forth. So that, because of that, it's important to know that, you know, the UAE now has specific options to help you come up with a roadmap and kind of account for these different complexities in your family dynamic. And ahead of time, just create your own wish list, your own will, that will be the roadmap for all your heirs and all your beneficiaries and all those you that you leave behind. So now that's basically where we are in terms of our the high-level sort of legal framework. Now, as I said earlier, the reason, these options, until recently, I would even say that these options I've just discussed, they only apply to non-Muslims, but now that's no longer the case. And that's because, one, we have the ADJD, or Abu Dhabi Judicial Department, or Abu Dhabi Civil Personal Status Law, which allows Muslim residents to have a civil will. So basically, the restriction for it to apply to non-Muslims no longer exists. And additionally, as I mentioned earlier, even the UAE personal status law now allows Muslim expats to choose the law of their own country to apply. So, and also even the UAE civil personal status law seems to have the option of allowing anybody who wants to have kind of a civil, the civil law to apply to them. But by the way, this is all just for expats. The UAE Muslims are still only, they only have one option, and that is the UAE personal status law, which is not a civil law. So that's the principles of Sharia, but it only applies to UAE nationals who are Muslims. All the UAE nationals who are non-Muslims, for example, you know, Chinese, Indian, Russians, so they have a choice of having a civil will under any one of these options. So now let's talk about, it's not that we sort of understand the legal framework in terms of the different laws that apply. I guess one of the questions like, do I even need to have a will? Because in, let's say, my own home country, I don't have a will. I kind of know how my estate is going to be divvied up. You know, do I even need to worry about it here? And as I mentioned earlier, because you have so many choices now, any one of these choices can potentially apply to your estate. So you do actually want to, let me explain what would happen so you can understand what would happen if you don't have a will. So if you don't have a will, there's basically much depends on your religion, nationality, residency, and how it ultimately will be will apply. So or which law would apply. So let's start with, if you have no will, the default is always the UAE personal status law, which is based on principles of Sharia. Now, what does that mean when I say principles of Sharia? We'll talk about it a little later. This is kind of high level. So the default is you've got Sharia or UAE personal status law. Now, for non-Muslims, now you have the options of the UAE civil personal status law or foreign law or that's without, again, this if you have no will. So in other words, you can opt for the UAE civil personal status law, or if you're a resident of Abu Dhabi, you additionally have the Abu Dhabi civil personal status law, or you can bring your own common law or your own foreign law. And then for Muslims, you have the UAE personal status law or foreign law, as I mentioned earlier, because the new personal status law now offers Muslim residents to bring in their own law. So, and then ultimately, this is an event we don't have a will. And then there's also an opportunity to bring either foreign will or foreign judgment. So how does that work? So let's say you have no will, and the person passes away in Belgium, and so in Belgium they might not have had a will, but there's, so there's a probate proceedings that go on, and then there's ultimately a court issues the decision of how that estate should be distributed as per the Belgian laws. Now, you can bring that decision from the Belgian court to the UAE and enforce it here. So that's a little bit outside of the person status law, meaning it's outside of, there's a different law that applies to that, and that is the law of basically enforcement of a foreign judgment. So what you're doing here is you're not going through inheritance proceedings. Instead, you're just enforcing a foreign judgment. And the UAE's jurisdiction on that front evolved quite a bit as well. And I did a podcast not long ago about enforcing a foreign judgment. So again, until recently, that wasn't really an option for many to enforce foreign judgments in the UAE. These days, the courts are, it's a very well established and sort of oiled process in terms of enforcing foreign judgments. So if you, let's say, have a probate judgment from Belgium, then you can come and enforce it here. So you're not enforcing a will, you're just enforcing a judgment. Also, let's say you have a will in Scotland. And so the person dies and they left a will in Scotland. And so it is also sometimes possible, depending on how the will is structured, is of bringing that will, once it's been sort of stamped in Scotland, and bringing it to the UAE and trying to enforce it here in the form of what's called like an order on petition. So again, it's more you enforcing already an acknowledged obligation, acknowledged decision. So it's not enforcement of foreign judgment yet, but it's like an order on petition, which is there's already kind of a decree of how things need to be distributed, and so you're enforcing it. That it's a little kind of more nuanced, but basically that's now possible as well. But it is a much more difficult process, and we have these days some examples I've given you in terms of countries. We've had wills from Belgium, we've had wills from Scotland, from France, from Switzerland, from England, from Slovakia. So we've had all these different wills, and it really depends on which country the will comes from in terms of its ability to be applied or to be ultimately enforced in the UAE. So for example, in the case of Scotland, we were able to do it quite quickly. In the case of a Swiss will, it was very, very difficult. We are now doing one for Slovakia, and that's taking a very long time for a number of different reasons. So while the option remains, it is it's time consuming. It is still uncertain. It can be very lengthy because there's so many different kind of administrative steps that are involved, and perhaps one day I can do a separate podcast on this topic. But I do want to make clear that it's no longer the case that just because you have a foreign will, you know, it has no effect in the UAE. And that used to be the case, but it's no longer so. So that's if you have no will, right? And then it's a high level. And then if you do have a will, for now you have multiple options in the UAE. So for non-Muslims, you've got the DIFC, mentioned earlier, we have a ADJD, and then you have under the UAE civil personal status law, you can also have your own will, for example, in Dubai courts. Now, that particular option is still sort of evolving. The law provides for it, but in practical terms, it's not as well developed as, for example, the DIFC or ADJD. So for non-Muslims, if you wanted to do a will in the UAE, Right now, at least you have three options: the DFC, ADJD, and potentially the civil person status law, though that one still needs more time to evolve. Now, if you're a Muslim in the UAE, only resident, not a UAE national, you now also have two options. One is the ADJD, as I mentioned earlier. So you can have a civil will, but equally so. So that's basically your only option if you wanted to have a will. Right now, that's because the DFC is still limited only to non-Muslims, even under the UAE civil personal status law, that seems to still be kind of limited mainly to non-Muslims, at least in practical terms. So for Muslims right now, as we're having this discussion, the one option that's a real option that exists, and that's the ADJD, a civil will. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there's this obviously an option of a foreign will. So if you have a foreign will, you can also bring it here and potentially enforce it. And then you enforce it through this, you're not coming here and arguing or litigating the matter, you're basically doing it through what's called a writ of execution, and that's if, you know, but it really depends on what form the will come from that specific country, and it, that's really where the nuances and technicalities of the specific country really matter, because as I mentioned earlier, we had great success with a Scottish will and a lot more sort of lengthy process with a Swiss will or a will from Slovakia. So it really depends, but if you do have a will, a foreign will, the process for enforcing it is you submit to the court as a writ of execution, and then get a kind of an order on petition for a writ of execution, and then you move through enforcement. So you don't have to kind of relitigate it and argue, okay, well, this person has these sort of had these family members at the time of passing, and these are the different assets. So you don't have to kind of sidestep all that or leapfrog, and you go straight to enforcing the foreign will. So, to sum up, if you have a will for non-Muslims, you've got at least three options here: DST, ADJD, and the civil person status law. For Muslims, you have ADJD, and then for both Muslims and non-Muslims, there's also an option of enforcing a foreign will, but it is a lot more, in practical terms, kind of uncertain than if you have a local will. Now, this is in terms of substance, why having a will versus not having a will is important. And that's because what law would apply, and then what would be sort of the ultimate effects of that law. So under the UAE personal status law, and that's the one we mentioned before, that's based on principles of Sharia. I mean, it's a very complex area of law. So Sharia in and of itself, I mean, there's the special calculators that need to be used at that point in time to figure out what fractions of what estate will go to whom. But there is at a high level some of kind of the most relevant aspects of the Sharia principles. And that, for example, boys will always get 2/3 more than the girls, right? And so, and generally speaking, in Sharia, so the male heirs, so I guess the system looks for male heirs. So first it looks for the offspring, like a, sort of a male, like a son. If there's no son, then it looks up and looks for the father, if there's a surviving father, of obviously the parent, the grandfather, that is. And if there's no grandfather, then it looks sideways. Again, we're looking for male, uncles. So in other words, a priority under Sharia is to file a male offspring. So it's son, father, uncles, or grandfather and then uncles. So in that case, let's say if you don't have a son and you don't have your father's no longer alive, the father was no longer alive, the grandfather. So then the uncles would inherit, they will kind of inherit a big portion of the estate. Now, if there's a son, then it kind of trumps everybody else to an extent. But if you have boys and girls, so the, let's say sons and daughters, then the boys always get 2/3 more than the girls. And then also if you have living parents, the living parents will also get a share. If you have living siblings, they will also get a share. Again, this is very difficult and complicated to explain exactly. Just I'm giving some high level examples, and this is why you need to use the calculator. But ultimately, it's almost the grandparents will always inherit, and there's a very good chance that the siblings will also inherit. And ultimately, if you've got daughters and sons, that your sons will inherit more than your daughters. So there's that kind of dynamic with Sharia. The other is that you cannot have a will. You cannot basically will your estate under Sharia, right? But you can will 1/3 of your estate to a non-heir. And so non-heir meaning to somebody who's not related to your family. So it has to be, let's say, it could be your neighbor. But even that is limited to approval of all the heirs. So to be able to will 1/3 of your estate during your lifetime, it has to be to a non-heir, and it has to be agreed by all the other heirs at the time. Now, this in particular is important, and also under Sharia, non-Muslim family members do not inherit. So, for example, a Muslim man marries a non-Muslim woman, and under Sharia, that's allowed. The woman does not need to convert. So a Muslim man marries a non-Muslim woman. Because she's not Muslim, she's not considered to be his heir under the principles of Sharia. So therefore, when he passes, she doesn't inherit. So the wife does not inherit. So that's an example, for example, where you could will 1/3 of your estate to your spouse who is non-Muslim. But even in that case, all the heirs would have to agree. So it's complicated. So this is kind of the, you know, the concept of Sharia principles. And this is why, for a certain particular residents, you know, even if they're Muslim residents, but let's say born and raised in other countries, they would prefer a different distribution. And this is why being able to have a civil will where they can decide how they want their heirs to do, to inherit is, you know, is now a much welcomed option for a lot of Muslims who are open to having their inheritance be handled under principles other than Sharia principles. So that's under the UAE personal status law, which is based on principles of Sharia. Now, under the UAE civil personal status law, right? Now we're, so that's that. This is the one that applies to non-Muslims. So high level, remember this is the law only from 2024, so it's still new law, but the high level, so in terms of distribution, so let's say the husband dies or the woman dies, under this law, the 50% of their estate, this is without the will, right? We don't have a will yet. So it's just pure application of the law, the civil law. So then 50% of the estate goes to the spouse. And then the other, and then the remaining 50% is equally between the children. So let's say the husband dies here, and this is civil family. A civil marriage, right? Obviously, it's effects. So the husband dies by application of this law. This is no will. By application of this law, 50% goes to the wife. And then the other 50%, let's say there's three kids, one son and two daughters. The 50% of the estate get divided or inherited by the children in equal shares. So that's the UAE personal status law that became available just, you know, literally a year ago. Okay, so now that's for non-Muslims, or I guess for non-residents, or for residents, I'm sorry, for residents. Now, the other option is, again, this is in the case of no will, the other option is the foreign law, and that's where you can bring in, this is basically the heirs, because what we're talking about here is the person died, right? If the person died, let's say they were UAE resident, let's say they were from New Zealand, and then they passed away, whether here or outside, and their heirs, so their family members now want their own law to be applied. So they don't want the Sharia law, or they don't want the civil, the UAE personal status law, which is where the 50% goes to the spouse, the 50% to the children. They want a different law to apply, let's say a New Zealand law, or let's say, you know, Belgium, because Belgium is pretty nuanced kind of a law. So they want that law. So that's also possible. It's, you know, these days it's, in the past, it was a lot more complicated. Now, the new UAE personal status law actually provides for this. It's article, I even have a note here, article 11.3. So they can also bring interpretation of a foreign law. But as I mentioned earlier, what you need to prepare yourself is that you would ultimately have to educate a local judge, a UAE judge, of that New Zealand law or about the Belgian law. And depending on what law that is, and depending on sort of the dynamic of the family and the members, you have, maybe they're fighting, maybe they want a different distribution. It could be, in practical terms, it could be expensive and difficult, complex to actually teach the judge of what that law may be. And at the end, so it may not be worthwhile, and maybe better to opt for one of the other laws that exist within the UAE. So the option is there. In practical terms, you just beware. It'll probably take some time before, and it may not be... and also don't forget, because what we're talking about here is the person already passed away. So there's already grief in the family, right? And in many cases, the heirs or the whole family may not even be living here. So they don't even really know kind of nuts and bolts of what it's like in the UAE. So now you're kind of adding complexity on top of complexity. So it can be really, really complicated for, you know, in addition to having to file a case here, then to bring the law of another jurisdiction to try to apply here. So that's another sort of argument in favor of actually having a will, so to take away this uncertainty and complexity. And then finally, the last option, that's if you have no will, is that, let's say if you have proceedings, a probate that's done in the foreign country, let's use Kenya or India. So there was a court that decided how that particular The testator's, let's say, or you're the person's, the deceased estate to be divided, and now there's a court decision from India, and so you can come here and then you enforce it here. So you're not enforcing a will, you're enforcing a foreign judgment. So that's the other option. Now that's if you have no will. So just kind of in summary, the UAE personal status law, you've got UAE civil personal status law, the foreign law, and the foreign probate, or the foreign the enforcement of foreign judgment. So in the event of a will, so if you know, if it happens so that the person doesn't have a will, it's not like all is lost, by the way. And this is important. It's for, I'm not sure why, but for so long, there was this kind of this misconception amongst many expats that if the person dies, especially without the will, that so their the person's estate or interest go to the government. That was never the case. But it certainly is not the case now. It's just there are still options, but their options are a little too many, and sometimes it's quite complex to apply them. So why I'm saying this is because it's better to have a will. So now we're going on to the will. So now if you have a will in the UAE, or it's if you have a will, you should have a will. A UAE-based will, but there also could be foreign wills. So if you have a will there's in the UAE, there's now, as mentioned earlier, there's effectively two options, you know, with one more potential sort of in the making, and that's DIFC for non-Muslims, ADJD for all Muslims and non-Muslim, but only residents, not UAE nationals. And then you have other civil wills that you can do under the, so the UAE courts, the Dubai courts, or, you know, any other local courts, but it's still developing because it's as per the new law. And then you have, in terms of the will, we talked about the Muslim will. Well, the Muslim will you can have, and that's one third of the will that you can will to a non-heir, but with all the approvals of all the other heirs. And then you've got the foreign will. So in the foreign will, obviously we discussed this enough. It's whatever you have somewhere else, and you bring it here to enforce, and you enforce it kind of as a writ of execution. So not a substantive judgment, but as a writ of execution. So so these are the options for having a will. Now, in terms of if you were just to summarize, or my advice, and it would be effectively you have two wills that you can do: DIFC for non-Muslims and ADJD for Muslims and non-Muslims. Now, which one to choose from? It really kind of it depends on what you want. A lot of people, obviously, if you're a Muslim, your only option is ADJD. But if you have both options, DIFC, generally speaking, is more expensive to register. It costs anything between 10,000 to 15,000 dirham per will, whereas the ADJD will is about 1,000 dirhams. However, there's a lot of nuances between the two types of wills, and one of the important nuances is that in the DIFC, the amounts that I just mentioned, so the fee you pay to the DIFC to register that will, it also covers the probate proceedings, meaning that once a person dies, so to be able to enforce that will, to sort of affect the will and apply it, then it's that the court proceedings that are required in order to affect the will or to probate the will are already covered by that initial DIFC fee for when you were registering your will. So that's kind of that's an important element, because a lot of people think DIFC is too expensive. Yes, but compared to ADJD, it's truly like 10 to 15 times more. But it does cover the court proceedings afterwards, for the probate proceedings. Basically, means when the person passes away, how do you enforce that will? Now, in the DIFC as well, you can update wills. So let's say if you want to amend a will, and there's update as an amendment. So the DIFC, it's a global will, so you can include all your assets. It's only English. It's very digitized now, so it's very efficient and effective, and it's do it all online, signatures online, e-signatures, and then you can make it as broad or as general as detailed as you want. But ultimately, to update it, so if let's say you bought a new property or you opened a new bank account, you can just submit that new data point to the DIFC, and that's not considered to be an amendment. It's just considered to be an update. It doesn't cost anything. You just basically notifying the DIFC court, say, please include this data points into them, kind of my file. If you want to amend something, amend, meaning like let's say you have a new beneficiary or you want to change the executor, and then that costs 500 dirhams, and so you don't You know, this is compared to the initial 10 to 15,000 dirhams. 500 dirhams is not so much to amend the will. Now, in ADJD, that's not an option. So if you want to amend anything, you will have to kind of go through from the beginning and kind of reissue the will. Now, one of the other things is for both cases, in ADJD and in the DIFC, it's all kind of online process, and we'll talk about the process and the procedure of registering shortly. But it's all very, these days, it's very efficient, to say the least. Now, in the DFC, there's a few other nuances. If you have a DFC will, for example, get married afterwards, the marriage revokes the will. So let's say somebody got registered a will, and then 3 years later, they got married. So effectively, their marriage revokes the will. So just kind of keep that in mind. When you do marry, you will basically have to issue a new will. In the DFC as well, if you divorce, so you have a will and then you went through a divorce. So the divorce does not invalidate the will, but invalidates the gift to your spouse. So for example, let's say in your will it said, well, my spouse will inherit 50%, so on and so forth. And now you have a divorce and the person dies. So you don't necessarily need to have, the divorce itself did not invalidate the will, and you don't necessarily have to change the will, but it's just that gift to the ex-wife will fail. In other words, it's no longer enforceable. ADJD does not have these restrictions, but the DIFC does. So those are some kind of differences between the two wills. Also in the DIFC, the cost is quite high compared to ADJD, but they also have some template wills. Template wills, for example, if you have five properties or if you buy five bank accounts or five companies, you basically, the DFC will give you just these templates, and you pay, there's a 5,000 dirham fee, so it's cheaper, and you just use the templates. And that means that you don't necessarily have to have lawyers to help you draft these wills. You can just opt for these templates, and that's exactly with that in mind that the DFC introduced these options, is so just to make it a little more lucrative, but they are limited to specific assets, so those are kind of the options. And also ADJD also has a template that you can work within, for some people it's sufficient, and for others it's a little too limited. So ADJD has both their own kind of templates, or you can introduce your own. Now, let's talk about what goes into the will. So, there's kind of the main parts of the will are what? So you've got the beneficiaries or heirs, then you have executors, and you have assets, and then you have special conditions, and then you have special wishes, and you've got sort of children. So now let's kind of break it down. So you have at least six different components, if you will, of matters that you want to consider before you have a will. So you want to include them into the will. So one obviously is the beneficiaries. Who are the beneficiaries? Who are the heirs? Who will inherit your stuff? You know, your sort of life legacy. Generally speaking, we recommend at least, in the DFC, it's actually the requirement is to list at least two alternative beneficiaries or distributions. In other courts, it's not, in ADJD, it's not as important, but we recommend, generally speaking, to list at least two. And this, for example, so let's say I wish for my mother to inherit my share, and in the event my mother is not there, it will go to my father. In the event my father is not there, it will go to, let's say, my uncle or an aunt, or so on and so forth. So that's called alternative distributions. And so our advice is always to include multiple options. You know, some people, we've had 5 to 7 people, so you're going to go through, if this person is not available, that person. And so, and then you can do, obviously, you could say, it all goes to my children equally. If one of my children is not available at the time of this, then his share goes, or her share goes, to the other children. And if that share fails as well, then it can go to, let's say, the nieces and the nephews and so on and so forth. So this is basically called alternative beneficiaries. Now, in terms of who you can name as beneficiaries, there's no familial or blood connection that's required. So that's important. So you can will it to anybody. Or you can designate your beneficiaries or heirs, whoever you want to be. It could be your neighbors. We've actually had some clients who wanted to designate their housekeepers, for example, as some of the beneficiaries of some of their assets. So that's the beneficiaries, the people who inherit. Then you've got the executors, right? Executors are trustees, so to speak. And that's basically people who will manage the so the distribution and the management of your estate. So when the person passes away, so who will be handling all this? Who will be filing the proceedings? Who will be running to the different authorities, figuring out how which assets goes to whom, and submitting all the documents and connecting all the heirs and so on and so forth. So who is ultimately sort of acting as an executor or administrator of the estate? And equally so, here we recommend and at least to do multiple alternative executors. Now, because it's the UAE, you know, our recommendation is that you have somebody that's locally based here because it's still a fairly nuanced system. So now, executors, however, can also delegate their roles to someone else. So let's say in your will, you've stated that you want your sibling, your sister, to be your executor. And then your sister can then hire someone else on the ground to help sort of administer the estate. So in many cases, this is where law firms come in. So, you know, we as a law firm often do that. So let's say the executor will come and hire our law firm to help go through the proceedings, so the probate proceedings, and kind of helping transfer all the assets ultimately once you have the decree from the court. So, but in any event, you want to have multiple executors or multiple trustees, and until recently they had to be at least 21 years old. That's kind of one of the nuances, and they just literally 2 or 3 days ago the laws were updated in the DIFC in particular. Now they can be 18 because the age of majority in the UAE has changed to 18, so now they can be 18 years old. And and you can, for the purposes of executors and trustees, you can designate whatever authorities you want for them. Yeah, you can make it very specific or very limited in terms of what you want them to do with your estate. But remember, they're doing this on behalf of your for your heirs or for your beneficiaries, not for themselves. And then you want to address assets. What are the assets you've got? You can include, as I mentioned earlier, both in the DIFC and the ADGD, you can include all your global assets from whatever other jurisdictions. You can make it as detailed as you want or as general as you want. It's not required that you list all your assets. You can just say, oh, my assets, whatever they may be. And or you can make it like a very specific list and even introduce or, you know, attach documents of title deeds and sort of list of bank accounts and photos of your prized art or jewelry and so on and so forth. So you can be very, very specific. And the assets themselves, you know, it could be real estate, it could be physical assets, it could be financial assets, it could be digital assets. And I'll do a separate podcast on just digital assets because that's pretty relevant these days. And then you can also have what's called like specific gifts or, you know, versus residuary estate. So, for example, you could say, I want a specific watch to go to so-and-so, and then the rest of my estate, the residuary estate, to be distributed, you know, as per my wishes above. So that's called a specific wish. And that's, you know, in some cases where... You know, you have a particular thing that of specific sort of memory or sentimental value to somebody in your family or somebody in your friends. So you want to make a specific wish for something to go somewhere. Then you can also, so that's in terms of the assets. And then in terms of special conditions, you can also include special conditions in your will. So for example, you want special conditions to be provided for your parents, right? Your sort of remaining parents, your living parents. Usually you want your parents to be located in a particular a retirement home, for example, and certain amounts to be paid towards their kind of retirement on a monthly basis, or you want them to be living in a particular property of yours. So those are called the specific wishes, which you can also include in the will. And then also in terms of, it's in the DIFC, it's even possible to introduce what's called almost like a parts of a trust element. And that is like a trustee. So just say you can introduce conditions to your beneficiaries inheriting certain things. So for example, I want my children to only inherit this if, let's say, they go to the university or if, you know, they've reached a certain age and or if they've accomplished whatever it is you wanted them to accomplish. Or if, let's say, they live in a particular place, or they help take care of their mother or their siblings, and so on and so forth. So you can also include these sort of special conditions, which is quite convenient because you don't necessarily always have to have a separate trust instrument. You can incorporate much of that in the DIFC. And then you also can include special wishes, and that's wishes. For example, I talked about the maintenance of the family or the parents, but also you can include funeral wishes. So, for example, some people have very specific wishes about how they want to be, how they want to be cremated, where they want to be buried, and such. So you can also include those, and they're becoming more and more common. And then the big bucket is the children, right? So so the children have, you got two types of ultimate guardians, right? So you want to outline who the guardians will be. And so you've got the permanent guardians, so you have interim guardians. And so the DFC allows you, and the DGD as well, both. And you want to have both, because God forbid something were to happen here, you know, who will be, and let's say the other parent is not here, or both parents are gone, so who will be before, and the permanent guardians are not within the UAE, they're not based here, so who will take care of the children while the permanent guardians are not here? So those are called the interim guardians. So the wills allow you to introduce, you know, to basically have both types of guardians, and I highly recommend that if you are going to go through the will and you have minor children, that you include those provisions. And so with regards to the guardians, I mean, first of all, the default is that, so if you've got both parents are alive, the living parent, the surviving parent, will always have default guardianship. So you cannot basically take away the guardianship from the biological parent. So let's say the mother passes away and she says, I want my children to go, because she's divorced from the husband, let's say, or from the father. And so I want my children to go to my sister. That will not work. So it's always the surviving parent always has default guardianship, unless there's some other conditions that would preclude that. You cannot go against that, but you can provide for if there's no more biological parent, who else will be the grandparents, and so on and so forth, and where they might be. And you also, once again, you want to have alternative guardians, and then consider in the UAE, who would you want to help you, to help the children, kind of take care of the children before the permanent guardians are appointed, and ultimately the children settle themselves with the permanent guardian. So, for example, let's say the grandparents live in Europe somewhere, and so the children are here, and both parents passed away. So who will take care of the children in the meantime? Who will even travel with them to Europe? So it could be your close friends. It could be your friend. It could be your relatives. It could be your nannies as well. So, you know, some people include their nannies too. So it's and then there's, you know, a few limitations in terms of. Male guardian. So, for example, like if you say you have a minor daughter and you want, and the father is not alive, so the guardian cannot be a male person if they're not blood relative. So, if it's not an uncle, so they cannot be. There has to be a female. So, this is some sort of limitations. So, yeah, so these are the different aspects. And this is the reason why, as well, you want to have a will, is because if you have a will, you're able to include all these different aspects of one sort of legacy, one sort of life, and create a roadmap for all those who are left behind to follow by, right? And so this is because that's ultimately, the will is the expression of your wishes. So here you would outline, once again, your beneficiaries, heirs, executors, assets, special conditions, special wishes, and custody and guardianship of the children. Now, in terms of formalities and registration of the wills, remember, we're really talking about right now DFC and ADG, because we're talking about wills in the UAE. So in the DIFC, the wills are only in English. In the ADJD, they're both in English and Arabic. It's neither here, it's not like it's bad or good, it's just that you will have ultimately and also an Arabic version. So in the way, if you're going to be enforcing ADJD will in the local courts, it only makes it that much more convenient, because it's already in Arabic. As the cost we already talked about, so the DFC wills, the new will, anything between 5,000 to 15,000 dirhams per will, whereas the amendment is 500 dirhams. While in ADJD, the costs are 950 dirhams, so truly is, you know, a lot cheaper than in the DIFC. But then also there's translation costs that need to be accounted for, because the ADJD will has to be in Arabic as well. And then in ADJD, as I mentioned earlier, there are no amendments of wills. In terms of the registration formalities, they're both online. They're on by appointment. And in the DIFC, you're required to have witnesses. And they cannot, but those witnesses cannot be beneficiaries, while in ADJD, the witnesses are not required. And then in terms of, you know, what the will looks like, I even, you know, kind of brought to see just visually to show what it looks like. You know, it's a pretty complicated document. So it's there, you know, anyway, so I guess we can see them better. But this is the DIFC will. It's in English, you see, and then ADJD is in English and Arabic. So it's two sides. But then if you want a template will, so like this ADJD has also a template will. It looks like this. And then there's also specific, for example, guardianship statements for the DIFC. They kind of look like that. So it's a pretty complicated set of documents. But in terms of the form of will, they're both digital in both places. And in the DIFC, it's all done through the QR code. And sort of it's signed and executed online, which, by the way, wasn't like this in the beginning. You had to physically be present here. Now we've advanced a lot more. Now there's not even a personal appointment, a physical appointment. It's all done online. In the ADJD, it's also so digital QR code. And it's like done through this OTP and then signed by hand and then kind of legally translated and attested. And in terms of the interface in the DIFC, it's done through like the DIFC portal. You can set up your own portal, and then, or you can do through the law firm's portal if they are registered practitioners like we are. So we do all of the wills for our clients through our portal. And then whereas in ADJD, you do it through your UAE pass or through like a chat portal or even email. So it's a little, you know, a little more options. So those kind of the formalities. And in terms of, in terms of basically the kind of probate or inheritance process, it can take a while. So this is now we're talking about, we've talked about having the will, right? So you have the will, you registered the will, and so now you need to enforce it. So if it's a DIFC will, then it all happens in the DIFC, and actually through the DIFC courts, as I mentioned earlier, it's already paid for by the fee that you would have paid when you registered the will. That's one. And two, by now, again, this is, you know, so many things have evolved since this option was introduced first. Now, basically, the DIFC courts arranges all the specific letters that are issued to the different authorities, you know, for the asset transfer. So, for example, certain real estate properties that need to go, that will go to the beneficiary. So the DIFC court now kind of coordinates with all the relevant authorities, let's say the land department, and will issue letters specific, okay, so this property should go to such and such beneficiary, that property should go in such and such beneficiary. So you don't need to file what used to be the case as a local kind of a court case to be able to enforce the DIFC judgment. So now it's all done very smoothly through the DIFC court, so much more expeditious. And then also ADJD similarly, because it's basically ADJD is issued, you can use it kind of as almost as an acknowledgement of debt, like through an order on petition. You file with an order on petition, kind of a writ of execution, and it moves much faster in terms of enforcement. We've enforced some ADJD wills just within a matter of like a month or so, and the DIFC wills as well, just recently enforced one. It's pretty fast, pretty smooth. You know, there's a few nuances, but generally speaking, that's the benefit of having a will. So what I can describe before and the kind of nuances and complexities can arise, if you do have a will and it is registered properly, and we've done both, and the DIFC and ADJD, then it can happen really fast. And it's, you know, and it's not just the enforcement of the will, it's also ultimate transfer of the assets. So we've been able to do these in many of our clients' cases just within just a few weeks, which is a huge benefit, especially when the family is left behind and they need to have access to properties or to bank accounts and such. So the courts move pretty fast. So that's that basically. Now, lots of options, but I kind of wanted to summarize. So if you are in the DIFC, if you are in the UAE, and if you've got assets in the UAE, then you want to take, you want to have a will, one. And then two, if you it's better to have a UAE-based will. And then three, you want the CWIL to be clear and be specific. So our recommendation is for it to be specific instead of just saying, okay, I want all my stuff to go to somebody. It's better for the ones you leave behind that you outline what your stuff is, you know, what are your properties, and include the title deeds and so on and so forth. Because some some people don't really like to include that level of detail for one reason or another. Others actually want to include more details. But our recommendation, generally speaking, whatever it is you do, because ultimately the purpose of this is to leave a roadmap for your loved ones once you are no longer around. So you want it to be clear, you want it to be specific. And then remember to update the will kind of as your life circumstances change. It's a properly sort of structured will. It's not an expense, I think it's an investment, and it's ultimately a protection mechanism for your children, for your spouse, for your business and your legacy in general. And so, as I mentioned, because the UAE is a sort of multi-layered legal system, clarity is not an option. It's kind of a mechanism for survival. That's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website. That's lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.